Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Lumos. Hello, friends. Welcome back to Shell Cottage Radio. I'm your host, Ezra, a.k.a. Bill. Also known as Sir Ezra, the Watchful, History of Magic Professor, the Flannel Wizard, obviously. Yours truly, me. Please welcome your lovely design witch, the fascination of fourth year, my wonderful co-host and yours, Lottie, a.k.a. Fleur.
Hallo, einen wunderschönen guten Tag. Frohe Weihnachten euch allen. We are so happy that you're here. Come in, make yourself at home in our beautiful little cottage on the outskirts of Tinworth. This is episode number 71 of Shell Cottage Radio, and this week we will talk about chapter 14 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, Snape's Grudge. Today we have some cottage catch-up as well as special trivia questions that we can ask Bill, our totally British wizard, about British Christmas, before we dive into the summary and the chapter discussion. So let's start with some long-expected cottage catch-up. Are we recording is the question.
Yeah, we're recording.
Recording?
Yeah, what? Yeah.
Oh, okay. I don't know. You looked at the recorder and
I look at the recorder all the time. I'm always making sure that your audio levels are good and that we're good.
Okay, good. Are they good?
Yeah, they're good.
Are you good?
I'm good. Yeah, I'm great.
Okay.
How you doing?
Good.
What's up?
It's like my students, you ask them, how are you? Good.
I'm good.
Good.
Yeah, fine.
Uh-huh. Yeah. No, I'm doing really good. I'm so excited. I love that we changed up our space a little bit and we're getting closer and closer and closer to, you know, the studio that we want and that's functional, that looks good. And we are actually working on some visuals to make a video version of this.
Yes. Yes, we are. And it's going to be great. I'm pumped. I've ordered some stuff on Amazon that I think is going to be really good. Merry Christmas to us. And it will be for the studio, for the video version. And hopefully you guys will like it. I just wanted to bring that back. So anybody who wants to check it out over on YouTube, it'll be hosted on the Extended Edition. It'll be the Shell Cottage Radio playlist over there. So you can check that out. I want to say, though, just want to go ahead and full disclosure here. I was one knee trembling up on my desk the other day trying to adhere a, what do you call this? It's like it's not wallpaper.
Well, it's like
it is wallpaper.
Right? You just stick it to the wall and you can peel it off if you need to.
Yeah, I hope we can peel it off, and I hope it doesn't just tear off all of the paint.
It might.
Like we've got strips of it. But it was terrifying for a hot second the other day.
Yes, it was. I don't know if you noticed,
huh?
But yeah. I grabbed a blanket and I spread it underneath the table,
I did.
The desk.
Why?
So if you would fall, you would fall. I don't know.
Wow.
Not as hard.
Like that blanket was going to cushion my fall.
Honestly, I had the most terrible visions.
Why not the pillows?
I don't know. I thought if you fall down and you step on a pillow and then you strain your ankle or whatever.
If I would have fallen, it would have been bad either way. I would have broken an arm.
I was scared.
I would have cracked my head. I mean, just... Yeah, these. I think at first Lottie was kind of worried about these desks that we have. Like, standing on that? Like what? And it's like I pointed to, and I didn't. I'm going to point to it now, though. These are called husky desks. All right, husky, meaning that they can handle quite the load. All right, so I wasn't too worried. And when I, saw muscle.
Yeah.
I'm nothing but pure muscle. I don't want to brag or anything, but that's muscle. It weighs a lot. All right, so and I got a lot of it. So, but
no, honestly, you do.
Yeah. No. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. You're so sweet. But I got up on the table and it's fine. I knew it was gonna. It holds like over 1,000 pounds or something like that. Crazy. It's a workbench. They're actually workbench.
Oh, okay.
Benches. Yeah. Yeah. So they're designed.
They're awesome.
Yeah, they're designed to be have like clamps and different things on them. And I just thought, okay, cool. I can kind of do whatever I want here. I clamp a lot of stuff like our microphones and cameras and lights and stuff to the bench itself. But anyway, I was up there trying to put the wallpaper up. And yeah. Oh, boy, if you guys could have saw, the right knee was shaking. I was like, it was like sticking everywhere. And I was like, I was like taking it off and I was like re-adhering it. And then I'm like, let's just try to put it in the corner. And then I go, oh, it's wrinkling. And then I just freaked out.
I mean, I was sweating while I was watching you.
Oh, I was sweating. There was, it was bad. Anyway, so yeah, it does look cool though. And we then kind of tacked up some of my, some cool artwork behind me. Got nice little backlight.
That
and,
brought back memories of, if you remember, our bug attack on one of our episodes. It was also around, like, last year, around Christmas, I think.
Oh, do you guys remember
terrible
that?
Terrible bug attack.
Do any listeners remember the, like, literally, I mean, I think you can hear in the background of that episode, just like a... Mm-hmm. Then you can hear this whoopsh, whoopsh, and it's just like... Psh. And I'm sorry for bug enthusiasts, but, like...
Sorry.
Like honestly, you guys, Lottie... is out of, she's typically like, you know, I mean, how do I put this? She's very,
I don't like to just kill the animals.
Yeah, no, not at all. She's out on that. And that's not right. That's always, but like when it comes to scary spiders and bugs, you turn into a different person.
I'm so sorry. Yeah, I'm gone. Like I'm, yeah.
You just, it's something takes over.
It's something instinctive that I can't really control. And it's hard to overcome.
Phobia. It's a little phobia, and we're working on it. But yeah, we found, this is disgusting.
One of the bugs survived.
One survived. So go check behind your picture frames in your house. And you know those little stink bugs? Like the...
Yeah, we don't have them, and I've never seen them in Germany, but here, if you kill, if you squash them,
yeah,
they
stink.
They put up a really bad smell.
Actually, even if you don't do that, like even if you're just around them, you start to mess with them a little bit, like push them, that's their defense mechanism. Yeah. They just, you know, little pume of little bug fart, and it's just like, it's just right there, and you get away, because you're like, ugh, it smells bad.
I know.
But we got to pull off I think we're just moving the frame over to the other side of the wall, and I take it off, and I'm about to reach behind it and start touching it, and here crawls this little critter just over the frame and says, hello, I was sleeping, and I live
How
here.
How dare you.
How dare you move this frame? I was hiding from you guys, and I've been here for months. For months. That thing could have just, at any moment, it could have just sprang at you, got you.
I know, it was right above my head.
Right above your head.
But
so.
Anyway. Glad we moved everything, and now if you imagine we have a cool two desks next to each other and one desk coming out where we can meet in the middle, so it's like an L shape plus my desk next to it. It's really cool. It's like a T shape. Sorry, I should say it's like a T shape because
T shape. Yeah, yeah.
We meet in the middle, and then our desks are next to each other, the T.
Yeah, we'll post a picture on Instagram for you guys. We're pretty proud of it. I'm happy with it.
And we keep, that's the cool thing. Right now, we just keep experimenting with things. Last year, we experimented with names for our YouTube or what kind of content we want to post. And we feel like we just, with every step, we're getting closer and closer. And it's okay to try different things. Notice, okay, maybe that doesn't work the way we want to. And then try to something different. And that's what we did with our setup, with our YouTube. And I think, again, we're getting closer and closer to where we want to go.
Yeah, and actually the other day you posted on Instagram a question for listeners. We just recorded our summaries for these upcoming episodes, and you posed a question as to whether or not they are too long, are they too short, are they just right, does it matter to you, do you have a preference or not, and then even something about, I think, audio and... Right. So, yeah.
Yeah.
You do that, I'm going to go grab my coffee.
Okay. Sounds good.
Love you guys.
First of all, thank you to everybody who's voted. This really, really helps us. And it makes me feel so much better about the length of the summary, because sometimes we've been debating, are they too long? Are they, quite a bit to listen to? But actually, then we debate whether we should keep going, make them that long, put in all this effort. If you guys didn't even want it that long, why would we do that? So I thought maybe we just ask you guys.
Yeah.
And I am so happy with the result that you said it's perfect, either, you know, perfect length. I enjoy a detailed summary, or they could be even longer. So that motivates me to really put in the effort to write our summaries. We write them ourselves every single time. And yeah. I it's so fun because that way I also read the chapter in more detail and
Yeah. It helps the discussion, and then it's cool. I think some folks even indicated there was somebody who voted like, yeah, we love the music and the sound effects. So it just takes a little bit more effort to do, but we're hoping to, you know, pull those out later, post them on YouTube, and then we want the audio version to be highest quality really that good. We can make it. So
thanks again for giving us your feedback and your honest opinion.
Yes.
Yep.
So, anything else? I mean, I guess we're going to Germany soon.
Yes, Christmas is coming up, and next week, I mean, you might be listening to this maybe right before Christmas, and then even though our next episodes are after Christmas, they're still kind of Christmas-themed, so because we're recording a bunch of them right now before we go to Germany, so then we can schedule them for you guys for the next couple of weeks, but we're excited, to go see friends and family and walk around the Christmas markets and just enjoy the festive atmosphere in Europe.
Yeah, the Glühwein. I'm coming for you. All right.
Rika already recommended some of the good Christmas markets to us, and I recommended some to her because, she's in the area, which is a lot of fun to just exchange ideas.
I can't wait.
It's awesome. Me too. All right. I have a special treat for you, Bill. Okay. Oh, did you want to mention something else? I see you just grabbed your lightsaber.
Oh, no. Well, I... Yeah.
Okay. Did you want to say something? Well, you did.
I'm holding it right here. And, I have it next to me. And so sometimes I just play with... Wow. sometimes I just grab something to kind of fiddle with or whatever. You know what I mean? While we're doing podcast. And it happens to be here now, so I kind of wanted to, and I got also a point with it, right? I can't wait for the video version of the podcast so people can actually, like, what's going on?
Bill's just in the background igniting some lightsabers we're talking about wands.
Right, yeah. Now, I do know we don't have any wand partnerships yet, necessarily. We did get a wand, and we are going to kind of maybe reach out to that company, and I can see later if they're just... It's a great wand. We got the Elder Wand, actually.
We got the Elder Wand right here.
Which is awesome.
Maybe we shouldn't tell anybody, so, because, you know, they come for us and want to try and get
I don't know. Yeah, right. Oh, yeah. Shoot, sorry. We don't have it. It's just a replica.
Just kidding.
It's a fake. Just like...
Not the real Elder Wand.
Right, it's not the real one. We got this one from Bellatrix Lestrange's vault. Anyway... but no, I have my lightsaber. If you guys, by the way, by the time you hear this, it's almost like too late for Christmas, but, I don't know, future birthday parties or whatever, I'm starting up on the Extended Edition channel, a lightsaber collaboration. And so I'm going to be grabbing some lightsabers, and I have like a code. It's called, it's my name, Ezra7. And, you can go put a link down below. If you click the link, you're shopping through kind of my store. You go in there, I get a little commission kickback on that, and you guys get 7% off. So it's mutually beneficial, but it's insabers.com. And they have a branch over in Germany, which is
super cool. Yeah.
I was shocked by that. just happened to have it right here. And so go get you a lightsaber. And then the wand thing we're going to figure out too, because that's something I would like to have one product, you know, sort of per fandom that we talk about on the Extended Edition. And here on Shell Cottage Radio, it's wands.
Yes.
It could be cloaks, I guess. It could be other things, time turners. Different
cool items or Funko Pops. I don't know if you can review Funko Pops.
You can.
Let us know, though, if you are someone who collects wands or merch in general. Like, I think it's really cool when I see different wand collections, and I don't know too much about, like, the different, you know, we have, for Star Wars, we have Endsabers, we have Sapneo, we have all these different companies who
produce like different types of lightsabers and stuff.
Which is pretty cool. I wonder, I don't know if there is as many in the Harry Potter realm, really.
Yeah, I don't know. This was a really good replica, though. It's a really good high quality.
Awesome.
So I will figure out the company name on that. And then. So that's about it. Those are the updates. That's the ketchup and the cottage, guys. Okay.
Okay, Bill, are you ready for some British Christmas trivia today?
Oh, I absolutely love. Absolutely.
Okay, I hid the answers from you so you can't see them in the dark.
Okay, good.
Okay, here is number one. And please let us know if you're from Britain, from England, please let us know if these are actually legit, so or if these are kind of silly. Okay, number one. What traditional Christmas item is pulled apart by two people during Christmas meals in Britain and typically contains a paper crown, a small gift, and a joke?
Is it called a snapjack?
Or nine.
Is it like something jack?
Nine.
No. A cracker?
We're getting closer.
Is it it's a snapper?
The cracker is good.
Cracker snapper?
Ripper snapper.
What is it? I don't know.
Okay, you get it's a Christmas crackers. Those are Christmas crackers.
Oh, Christmas cracker.
Yeah. Christmas crackers. The traditional Christmas item is the Christmas cracker. It was first created by Tom Smith in 1847. When pulled apart, it typically reveals paper crown, small gift, and a joke.
Nice.
So that'd be a fun tradition, okay, I feel cool. Like. Sometimes yeah. I wonder, because my sister-in-law, so my brother's, well, girlfriend,
yeah.
Long-term girlfriend, she's Australian, and they do a lot of British, obviously, a lot of British
right,
Christmas traditions and food and stuff. So I wonder if they do that. I have to ask her.
Yeah.
Or if you're Australian, can you let us know if you do Christmas crackers?
Yeah, they do Christmas traditional stuff. They just do it down under, love.
Yeah.
Just down under.
Upside down.
Just upside down. they turn it upside down and they... Oh, okay. All right.
Number two. I'm in German teaching mode.
Yeah.
So I repeat myself.
Eins, zwei, drei.
Okay. The broadcast is no, no. I'm reading the answer
I see the question.
Every day, every Christmas day, a British tradition involves the monarch addressing the nation. What is the name of this broadcast and which monarch started this tradition in 1932?
Oh, gosh. You mean I have to know the monarch during that time? I don't know.
I'll start with the... with the first one, what's the name of the tradition?
Oh,
have you ever heard of this tradition?
No. So the Christmas address, the holiday pump up spirit address. Is it the
royal the royal pump up
the royal pump up? Yeah, that sounds good.
I love that.
Yeah,
it's
let's get ready to Christmas. Okay. I don't know. There was... Oh, in 1932, it was a king.
Mm-hmm.
It was a king. It's... I don't know. What's his name? Isn't it Queen Elizabeth's father? Pretty sure.
I think so.
What's his name? I don't know. Henry?
Almost. There's
Charles.
Like two or three different names that are...
William.
Like all
Charles.
Kings are... So, let me tell you. It's the Queen's Christmas message, or the Queen's speech. And it was first started by, that's interesting, I think they renamed it. Now it must be the King's Christmas Message again, because it was started by King George V in 1932. And back then, I have a feeling it was the King's speech or the King's Christmas message, right? Now it probably went back to the King's. I don't know.
Yeah,
it would be
I
kind of
know.
Odd if they call it the Queen's Christmas Message and then the King is... delivering the message, but who knows? So
would not us.
And the tradition has been continued by subsequent monarchs and is a key part of British Christmas Day broadcasts. Now, does the minister is there
of
a similar
magic?
Tradition for the magical world of Britain where the minister addresses his people?
I'm sure there,
even though he's not
cool.
A monarch, but
right, that'd be kind of cool though if he did. If there was some sort of like just yeah. Happy cheer spirit address given to the wizarding community. That'd be cool.
That would be cool.
Yeah. But is there anything in Germany like this where they give like an address to the people? Get out in the Christmas markets and drink the Glühwein.
Not really. Sometimes they do have a little message, I guess, but not really. Nothing officially. Nothing
you know, I don't even know what they do here in the United States.
I
know
can tell you, though. Sorry, yeah. Real quick. I can tell you some tradition for New Year's. We have two traditions that I know. So one is broadcasting the New Year's Eve party at the Brandenburger Tor, the Brandenburg Gate in Berlin. That's a huge party.
Yeah.
Where everyone celebrates the New Year's and they have this big stage and everything.
Yeah.
And then a tradition to watch this on New Year's Eve day, like the day of New Year's Eve, is and it there's probably like a loop one channel will just broadcast a loop of Dinner for One. It's a comedy thing. It's super old, where this butler serving, is it the queen or is it just a royal lady? It's an older lady, and unfortunately it's sad, but all her friends have passed away.
Okay.
So he pretends to be that friend at the table. She doesn't really, seems like she doesn't really notice, and he just goes around and pretends, and every time she proposes a toast, he has to drink for like six people because he pretends to be every single one of them.
Oh, that's funny. Okay, that's pretty cool.
And it's just a comedy sketch.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. It's just a New Year's Eve thing that you will watch at least once before you go into the New Year.
It's cool.
It's kind of silly, but yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. That's interesting.
So there you go. You said you don't really have that in the United States either.
I mean, no. People just have things they watch. I don't know. We're just watching football, I think.
There's football on New Year's Eve or Christmas?
I think so. Yeah.
The football players are not home with their families?
No, I don't think so. I remember, the New Year's Day and stuff, I think, yeah.
Okay.
So, college football playoffs and stuff.
Okay.
Right. It's just everybody's home. So everyone's, watching the, you're watching, it's on the telly and.
Yeah. You're kind of like Thanksgiving, where you can just watch football together.
Yeah.
Cool. So. On the telly.
Okay, well, I think that's it for trivia, friends. Sorry I didn't do so well this week, but we'll try it again next week with some more Christmas. Hopefully, are there more Christmas questions?
Yeah, we have two to three more next week.
All right, I'll do some research between now and then. We'll see how it goes. But with that, we are off into Chapter 14, Snape's Grudge. Chapter 14, Snape's Grudge. After Sirius Black had managed to break into the castle again, and this time threatened Ron with a dagger, security measures at Hogwarts went through the roof. Ron instantly becomes a celebrity at the school, and for once people are paying more attention to him than to his best friend. The mystery remains. Why did Black flee instead of silencing Ron and just moving on to Harry's bed? Neville, on the other hand, who had left the entry passwords for Gryffindor's tower lying around, experiences nothing but shame and disgrace for the next few days. He even receives a howler from his grandmother at the breakfast table. Despite heightened security at the castle, Ron and Harry can't help but to notice the statue of the One-Eyed Witch remains unguarded. Yet they choose to keep it a secret for the selfish reason that Harry can still sneak off to Hogsmeade on the weekends. Meanwhile, the fame starts to go to Ron's head. He starts to enjoy telling the tale of Black's attack over and over again to anyone who will listen. When Hagrid invites the two boys over for tea one afternoon, Ron instantly assumes that Hagrid too wants to hear the story firsthand. Hagrid, however, has other things to worry about. Buckbeak's trial is coming up, and Ron and Harry had completely forgot to help prepare for his defense. Hagrid understands that they were too busy with school and the attack, and he doesn't blame them at all. Instead, he reprimands Harry and Ron for letting Hermione down while she is going through a very difficult time. But even after Hagrid advises them to value their friendship with Hermione more than their dispute over their pets, Ron continues to be nasty. When she notices that Harry is planning to sneak out again for the upcoming Hogsmeade weekend, Hermione gets very worried about her friend. She can't believe that they're taking that risk at such dangerous times. But Ron and Harry try to ignore her as best they can. On Saturday morning, Harry pretends to go back to the common room after breakfast, while everyone else is getting ready to leave for Hogsmeade. He waves Ron goodbye and hurries over to the One-Eyed Witch. It is not his lucky day, though. First, he bumps into Neville right in front of the statue. And then, of all his teachers, Snape comes around the corner and finds him right there. The potions master knows right away that something seems suspicious. Harry is now forced to go back to Gryffindor Tower with Neville. Eventually, he manages to escape Neville and Snape and slip away to Hogsmeade undetected. Much later than anticipated, he meets Ron outside of Honeydukes. In their adventurous spirits, the two go to the Allery, check on Zonkos, and visit the Shrieking Shack. Then they get another unexpected visitor. Malfoy, Crabbe, and Goyle come climbing up the hill just when Harry is about to take off his invisibility cloak. The Slytherin gang only sees Ron standing there by himself. Malfoy provokes Ron as usual by making fun of his family and their lack of money. Harry decides not to let this chance go by, and still, under the cloak, he starts playing tricks on his Slytherin classmates. The three are utterly confused and try to get a hold of the invisible attacker. In the end, Harry gets too close to them and Crabbe's foot catches the cloak's hem. The cloak slides off of Harry's face. His head is only visible for a split second, but the damage is done. Malfoy stares horrified at Harry's head floating in midair. Then he turns around and runs. So does Harry. He runs and runs back to Honeydukes cellar, through the tunnel, and back to Hogwarts, hoping he would make it back before Malfoy could tell on him. Before he emerges from the witch's statue, Harry hides the invisibility cloak in the secret passageway. He forgets, however, that he has his pockets full of Zonko's goodies and the Marauder's map. Right on time, just after Harry steps out from behind the statue, Snape appears in the same corridor. He immediately takes Harry to his office in the dungeons. Snape informs Harry that Malfoy had just come to him and told him that Harry's head had appeared in Hogsmeade. He goes on assuring Harry that none of his body parts are allowed to be in Hogsmeade. Harry then lies straight to Snape's face and says Malfoy must have imagined it. This makes Snape furious as Harry more than ever reminds him of his arrogant father. Harry is asked to empty his pockets and Snape examines the empty Marauder's map. Using his wand, he tries to force the map to reveal its secrets. The map eventually responds, but not the way Snape had hoped. The text that appeared on the map contains quite sarcastic insults towards the potion's teacher. The insults are signed by four individuals named Padfoot, Prongs, Moony, and Wormtail. Something about these names seems to trigger Snape, and he summons Professor Lupin to his office. He demands an explanation. Lupin instantly downplays the situation and suggests it must be a product from Zonko's joke shop. Right on cue, a panting Ron appears at the door, claiming that he'd given Harry all that stuff in his pockets. Lupin acts so quickly that he doesn't give Snape a chance to counter. He grabs the map and promises to have a closer look in his office. He then asks Harry and Ron to accompany him for a word on their homework. All three leave the office without even looking back at Snape. Lupin may have just rescued Harry from Snape's fury, but he let Harry know how disappointed he is that at times like this, the boys would not turn in a powerful yet dangerous item such as the Marauder's map. The professor does not return the map to Harry, but dismisses the two without further consequences. Yet his disappointment makes Harry and Ron feel even worse. On their way upstairs, the two acknowledge they have messed up. As if the events of the day hadn't already been enough, Hermione meets them outside Gryffindor Tower and tells them in a trembling voice that Hagrid and Buckbeak have lost their case. The Hippogriff is going to be executed.
Or is he?
Or is he?
That's the big question we posed on some of our shorts lately.
Yeah.
And to us, I know we don't want to get deep into time travel right now, but to us, I mean, he's never been executed.
No.
Buckbeak has never been, not in this timeline. There is no real other timeline. So.
No, that's it. Never happened.
Sit back, relax. Buckbeak's fine. Going to be fine.
It's going to be fine, Frodo. I almost said Frodo. It's going to be fine, Frodo. Don't worry about it. So this chapter, Snape's Grudge, you know, mm-hmm. I was thinking about it the whole time that we were listening to it, and then there during the summary again, like his grudge.
Mm-hmm.
Just to really get right to it, it's the fact that he has a grudge against Harry's father.
Yes.
And you know, I think sometimes we think about stuff later on, like the bullying, the harassment, etc., the animosity between James Potter and Severus Snape. But really in this chapter, you find out about one of the climactic moments in their rivalry.
Yes, we do.
Right? Because this is a life or death matter. I mean, I think Harry interprets it as like, yeah, well, my dad saved you, and you're just sort of like, you know, kind of embarrassed by that or put out by that.
Yeah.
And Snape's like, whoa, 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 hold on a second. That's not what's up.
Yeah.
He tells him that it is, and I'm sorry I'm jumping right in. We're going to back up in a second.
That's okay.
But I just think the title, Snape's Grudge, really tells you a lot. And it sort of defines this whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, we have all these leading in events where there's this argument between the two or whatever. But you really figure out, this is a big moment when you first read the series, that like, oh, okay, Snape actually was almost killed.
Yeah.
He almost died.
Yep.
Because they played a prank on him. And then he goes to investigate it. Now, think about this. I mean, this is like that. We always talk about Snape's like stunted maturity and how he's sort of stuck during that time, and all of those people that he was feuding and had. He has processed feelings and emotions.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. Yeah.
Right. You can't go back to James and then have it out with him. You can't get that feeling out and talk through it or whatever. And he's not able to just forgive and forget or to move on or to grow into his own. So this is all still, it's grudge. That's a grudge. He's holding a grudge and he can never really resolve any of it. Except maybe through Harry in the end, and through some of these deeds that he's working through with Dumbledore. Mm-hmm. But he really holds this against him. Like, they almost, I mean, think about that from his perspective. They almost got me killed.
Oh, I know. They have every right. He has every right to hold a grudge against them.
Yeah.
So, even though, like, yes, after these years, maybe he should try and practice some.
Right. Right.
Working through his feelings, forgiveness and stuff. But again, Snape, very complex character. We're still working on our reading through Laurie Kim's book.
Yeah, Snape.
The Snape book. So very, very interesting. But yeah, Snape definitely has every reason to be mad at them. And back then. But what's interesting is that we always get Harry's perspective, right? Snape's being so mean. Snape doesn't like me. Snape's always favoring the Slytherins. But especially against Harry and Neville. he's especially mean to them. And Harry always has wondered why. But
yeah, we know why.
Harry doesn't. He just regurgitates what other people told him about his father, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't
know
any of that. Anything gone down. And he just trusts so much that his father was good and that he would never do something like that.
Yeah, I think what upsets Snape the most is that all the focus and attention around Harry and what Harry is, you know, who he's compared to, and it's all James.
Yeah.
If it were Lily,
yes,
you know, all that's ever touched on is you have your mother's eyes.
Yeah.
And that's it. And it's like, no, actually, he has a lot more than that. He's not James.
No.
Right? He has a lot of his mother's abilities and characteristics and stuff like that, too. But that's not what anybody ever focuses on. It's just what they can. That actually is a lesson to all of us, is the visual sort of component. Mm-hmm. They just say, oh, he looks just like his father, must be just like him. And in some ways, he does. It's almost like because, you know, it's his father, and he's trying. He's a seeker, right? And he's got the athletic thing down and all that stuff. But the softer side of him. And yes, there's moments where he has both his mother and his father in him, right? And he has this moment here where he outright lies.
Oh yeah,
outright lies. And he's just trying to. He's a kid. He's trying to cover his tracks here, and he definitely messed up. And Snape should be mad at him.
Yeah,
this is not a joke.
No, yeah.
This is not a joke.
Even Lupin shows him later, Harry, this is not to be taken lightly.
Right. As far as they all know right now, Sirius Black basically, you know, served the Dark Lord and gave up his parents.
They think that. Yeah,
even Lupin betrayed his parents and they believe that he's coming after Harry.
Yeah.
And so from Snape's perspective, it's like, okay, your dad tried to kill me. Here I am trying to save his son. Right,
and then Lily gave her life
to protect you.
Yeah.
Right, and so he's got a lot of issues with this. The woman he loved, his rival. This is his Draco Malfoy.
Right.
This is like if Snape is Harry, that's Draco. Or if Snape is Draco, this is whatever. Then James is Harry. It's like that's what he has going on in his mind here. And then Lupin is the one who he finds out is the werewolf. That when he goes in and they set him up to go in there, and they think it's all kind of funny. What if he gets in there? James is like, guys, he'll be killed.
Yeah.
You kidding me?
Yeah.
So if anything, there should be some amount of respect because James rushed down there and got him versus like Peter Pettigrew was scared to death, didn't do anything about it. And then Sirius might have just thought, well, he deserves it. You know, there's a little bit of darkness in Sirius, and he had just had enough.
Yeah.
Of Snape or whatever. Maybe he was more of a bully than we realize.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. We don't actually focus a lot on him and what role he played in all of that. But anyway, I just think there's a lot going on there. And in chapter 14, it is just all sort of revealed. Mm-hmm. And I think Harry should have in this moment. It's not, we always focus on like, well, when he does, when he's practicing his occlumency with Snape later on, that that's when he learns about a lot of these things. No, you learned about it right now in chapter 14 in Prisoner of Azkaban. So, true. Yes, he's a young man, but he realizes that his father is responsible for almost killing Severus Snape. So that now he just knows about the rivalry. He knows about the grudge.
Yeah.
That should carry with him into the next books, and it doesn't really. He seems to forget it, and he seems to kind of just move beyond it. And then he's a kid, right? Harry's a kid,
yeah, and
so it
and
doesn't
he also
sink
thinks,
in.
Okay, Snape didn't like his father at all, so he doesn't really trust his word that much. He trusts in his belief in his father, really.
Yeah, right, And he has every right also, too, to yell back at Snape as he does in this chapter, doesn't he? Where he's like yelling back at him like, you know, don't talk about my father like that. Yeah. Even says that he had a moment that was the last time he had felt this sort of anger was back at the beginning of the book when Aunt Marge was talking about his mother.
Yeah.
Right. And then she's like, she's calling his father a drunk.
True.
And then she's sort of like, you know, it's actually the mother. There's something off there or whatever. And so he loses his mind there. Mm-hmm. That same anger comes in now. And you get it because he doesn't know. He didn't get to know his parents. And so he doesn't want to think about them in any negative light. And you know, like he's not ready for that anyway. Sorry. That's just sort of my rant at the beginning of this.
Yeah, Snape even goes as far as saying rules were for lesser mortals, not Quidditch Cup winners. His head was so swollen. And then Harry's just like, shut up.
Yeah.
And then Harry, like, he's on his feet, rage such as he had not felt since his night Emperor Drive was coursing through him. Very good. You caught that. He didn't care that Snape's face had gone rigid, the black eyes flashing dangerously. What did you say to me, Potter? Yes.
Get him, Snape. Yeah, when Harry sort of rages out like that, have you seen those, to anyone listening, have you guys seen those like AI images where it's like Harry Potter and all the characters and they're muscled up?
Oh, yeah.
They're huge. They're bodybuilders. It's
bodybuilders,
like all of them are bodybuilders.
Huge, and like basketball players.
Yeah, yeah. And I imagine Harry just like in that moment just like popping out and he's just like, don't you talk about my father. You know, he's just huge like that. I think that's what popped in my head. Sorry.
Thinking about like...
Should we back up? I'm sorry.
Yes, we will in a second. Okay. I just wanted to mention that I think it's interesting. Some fans have posed the question, what if Harry was a girl or looked more like way more like Lily? Would Snape have treated him any differently, really?
Oh, yeah. I think that's, again, part of his immaturity. I really do. I think everyone talks about him like he's James.
Yeah.
And James is who he could not stand.
Yeah.
But for a fact, if the chosen one... would have looked, if he were, I'm trying to think, what's, Harriet, Harriet Potter, right? If it was Harriet Potter, then Harriet Potter would have looked more maybe like Lily, possibly, and had her father's eyes, And so that would have been totally different, I think so, too.
Like, imagine a little mini Lily sitting in your potions class and, you know.
Right.
That'd be also very difficult.
He'd still be a tormented kind of like almost maybe overprotective and still very secretive and guarded. But
oh, yeah, he has to be. Yeah, because he's still playing the double agent.
Right. But I feel like there would be his character would not be this angry, aggressive, visceral person. I think he would have turned into more of a secretive, mysterious character, right? Who was guarding and kind of, you know, still kind of like gray. We don't know which way. There's times where he does stuff where he vanishes and he seems like he could have been involved in some dark plot, but ultimately there's more of it's more in support of Harriet Potter than, you know. I'm going to make a short called Harriet Potter.
You should.
So I'm telling you right now, that's a good idea.
Even though he is kind of nasty still towards Hermione, and we have speculated maybe he sees a little bit of Lily in Hermione because she's so smart and wants to learn and is good at potions and best friends with James or Harry. So
Right. Possibly. Interesting.
Anyway, let's go back a little bit to the beginning when Ron is really enjoying the celebrity status that he got. And I can't believe how how they almost think it's cool. Even though he was attacked by what they think is a mass murderer.
He survived an assassination attack.
I mean, basically he did. I would be scared, though. I'd be scared. I think I would want to go home, honestly. But
yeah, I'm sure he was. I mean, he obviously, we know from last chapter, he was terrified.
Yes.
And everything. But once it settles down.
Yeah, and they put all these guards up. They put, like, security trolls in. And the fat lady is back. Because Sir Cadogan messed up.
Right. Yeah. He almost gets this false sense of security. Like, okay, I survived that. Like, yeah. I don't know. I'm cool. I'm a hero in some way. I don't know. So yeah, it kind of goes to his head though, right? He definitely becomes a celebrity at the school. And again, yeah, for the first time, people are paying more attention to him than they are to Harry. And I think Ron sometimes feels like, I know he feels like he's in the shadow of Harry Potter, mm-hmm. but as the series goes on, he sort of grows into his own and he becomes this. I love Ron's character because he cares so much about his family and his parents, his brothers, his sister, his best friend. He is in his shadow for a while, but then he sort of just grows into his own. Like
he does. Absolutely.
Think later on, if he were to look back on his time there, he's just like, wow, I'm like one of the. I was.
He's already cool. Like he doesn't need that.
Yeah, he didn't need
extra fame.
No, that's what I'm trying to say. Yeah, is that it's interesting that he thinks that if he were to look down at like Colin Creevy thinks he's awesome.
Yes.
Right.
He does. Yeah. He's Harry Potter. Not just because he's Harry Potter's friend, but honestly, the way Ron is always like, except for when next book we get into the whole thing in Goblet of Fire.
Yeah,
and the tournament. In this book, Harry gets another broomstick, the firebolt, and he's not jealous. He's like, let's go, look at this. It's so awesome for you. And he roots for him. He's not jealous of his Quidditch player status or anything. He's just like, that's so cool. Yeah. And hey, can I maybe try writing it? But he doesn't like, he's even like, let the man go through or something. Like,
yeah, he's rooting for his friend.
Absolutely.
And that's the thing. Oh my gosh, I've been down this road where you start to notice the people in your life who are rooting for you, right? And who are not, and who are rooting against you, or who like don't celebrate your successes. And it's interesting.
Yeah.
And there's different phases and different times for everybody. And so you don't have to be on or, you know, like, I don't know, solid for everybody all the time.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And that's what happens to Ron. Like you said, next book, it's kind of like he's not rooting for him. He's rooting against him. Like, this is bullcrap. What's going on? But to see him here, it is really good. It's really good to see his friend supporting him that way. And I think Harry also supports Ron and thinks Ron's awesome. It's like, you know, he lived in the wizarding community his whole life. Yeah. And so leans on him a lot early in the series to be the knowledge base and understanding of what's, you know, what's what.
I think this is one of those things where Ron doesn't realize what kind of an asset he is, like asset and friend to Harry and Hermione. Because it's just how he grew up. It's like, when I'm here, I sometimes don't realize, okay, I speak another language, I forget about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, that's something cool.
Absolutely, like, it is. Yes.
I could communicate in different languages, or teach people about my language. And sometimes, because it's been part of your life since you were born, it doesn't really, like, you don't really notice it as much.
Yes. And that's a lesson for everybody out there. It doesn't matter. Like, to look inward and look at your life and say, what is it that I have, that I'm an expert in, or that I'm accomplished in, or what am I good at? Like, mm-hmm. we all have something. Everyone has something. And I think a lot of people get caught up in this limiting mindset that says, like, nah, I'm not. Like what Ron does later on. Like, he starts to get kind of, like, down on himself. And it's like, whoa.
Yeah.
Everyone looks up to you. And then, like, I always think of Puffs, actually, where, what's his name? Wade? Was it not Wade? What's
Wayne.
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 Wade, Wayne. Wayne is, like, looking at all the Gryffindors thinking, they're so cool.
I know.
They're so awesome. And it's like, then somebody else thinks that about you. Yeah. Whoever you are, someone else thinks that about you.
Yeah.
And if they don't, I do. You know what I mean? Like, I do. I think it's been walking around it, like, in life here recently, looking at other people, total strangers, just saying, holy smokes, who is that? Is another spirit walking in this realm, and it is amazing. Who are they? What's going on? What are they offering into the world?
Oh, and, I know.
And like, where is everybody developmentally? Like, some people are just kind of not there yet, but they will be in 15 years. They're not. So what? That was me 7-8 years ago, right?
I know.
Where I had no path in life, and I was like, what's going on with my life, right? And so, not saying that I'm anything great, but like, everybody like evolves and develops at their own time.
Yeah.
And so Ron does that in this series. And then we all step back sometimes too. You'll take 5 steps forward, 2 back, and he will do that in Goblet of Fire. And Snape has a lot to offer. There's a lot of good things that he has going on. He's a potions master, right? He is super.
I actually, honestly, that now that you say that and I'm thinking about it, I think if he wasn't like super nasty to me, let's say we were taking his class, I think I would, like, except for the being mean to people.
Yes.
But I think I would like to take his class, because I had a math teacher who was very much like, and again, it's good to have different teachers who teach different methods and different amounts of like group work and individual work. But he's all about, like, most of the time it's just like, here you go, here's the recipe, follow the recipe, turn in your potion at the end, like, or, you know, I don't know if he does any demonstrations. We don't really get a glimpse of that.
Yeah.
But I think I had a math teacher who was very much the same. She showed you how to do it. Step 1, step 2, step 3, step 4. Mm-hmm. It's on the board. You know, you just do the same thing. Repeat. Don't make sure you read instructions. Every single step is important.
Yeah.
And then you should get the same end result.
Yeah.
And that helped me, like, because that teaching style actually helped me a lot. By rinse and repeat every single time. We knew it was a step 1, 2, 3, 4, and then maybe apply that to a similar problem yourself and try to solve it. So that's the year when I really like fell in love with math, and I think I would enjoy taking Snape's class, actually. And I think he could be such a good teacher because he knows so much, and as we see in the Half-Blood Prince book, he knows more than the people who wrote the book, the textbook.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many things that he is an expert in, or he could be a great duelist. He's so well versed in the dark arts, and he's such an asset to Dumbledore, and he could have been all of these things. But this is where you get caught up, like early on in his youth, there was a fork in the road, and he decided to go dark arts Voldemort because of other people, not really him. Mm-hmm. It was sort of in resentment to other people. And that's where we all got to be careful, is like not letting other people influence our own paths and our own walk in life. Right. And really make sure we're making those decisions for ourselves.
Right.
And it's not in opposition to somebody else or whatever, you know,
I think there's
more to it than that. I just, you know, yeah.
Yeah. No, I think there was definitely a curiosity, the natural curiosity in him that could be sparked by his background, by his childhood, right? I think he had a difficult childhood. We don't know too much about it, but we get little tiny parts of it when he meets, I think, Lily for the first time and stuff. I think he's not very happy at home. And so I think that he's just drawn to something different, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So actually, I don't know how we went back, like, from Ron back to Snape.
It's okay. Now we're on to Neville.
Neville, yes. I really want to talk about Neville and how I think it's awful how they treat him after his mistake.
Yeah.
I think it is okay to let your students know this is a mistake you can't make, especially not during this time. Mm-hmm. It is very dangerous. But and I'm going to read this part real quick.
Yeah.
So to see What are Neville's punishments? So Neville was in total disgrace. Professor McGonagall was so furious with him, she had banned him from all future Hogsmeade visits. Yeah, that's okay. Given him detention. Okay, we know that's a typical thing to do here in Hogwarts. And forbidden him, or forbidden anyone, to give him the password into the tower. Poor Neville was forced to wait outside the common room every night for somebody to let him in, while the security trolls leered unpleasantly at him. Mm. And then on top of all that, he receives a howler from his grandmother. And we all remember Mrs. Weasley's howler and how awful that was.
Right. Yeah.
But how can you, as responsible teachers for little student, they're 13-year-olds, they're my students' ages.
Yeah.
How can you let, while a mass murderer who has proven he can break into the castle, no problem, and escape, you won't find him. He's proven twice he can do that. How can you let Neville sit outside the common room? Yes, you have the trolls there, but are security trolls really going to be a problem for Sirius Black? Him outside his safe space.
Right. Yeah. I mean, just say that. There's no way it would happen in modern time. Like, if a teacher were at some retreat or camp and they're like, look, hey, if he doesn't know the knock-knock password to come into the cabin, you guys leave him outside in the cold. All right, he's gonna learn. All right. That's
like, terrible. I mean,
holy
it's
smokes.
Okay, give him detention. Okay, he can't go to Hogsmeade. Fine. That's okay. I know, like, take some... air quote joys from him that he can't enjoy anymore because he really messed up for a while, because so he learns, but leaving him outside is just
I'm a little disappointed. Did it say that he was left outside, or did I think it did
he
one time
he was forced to wait outside the common room every night for somebody to let him in, while the security trolls leered unpleasantly at him. And then it even says that Harry felt so bad for Neville. Oh, that was because of the howler, but yeah.
Well, I think, hopefully some of his other Gryffindors just said, hey, sorry, McGonagall.
I was going to say.
He's our friend, and we're not going to leave him outside. Like, that's dumb.
I mean, can you imagine Hermione or Ginny just leaving Neville outside?
Yeah. I know some people sometimes just make a statement. You're trying to really be like, hey, people's lives are in danger here, etc. We got to be super serious. And it's a fantasy novel, but... I'm rooting for Ginny to walk by and say, Neville, here's the password, you know?
And that's what we always want to do. We want to expand on what we get from the book, and we read between the lines, and we think, okay, maybe the first 2 days Neville was left outside, and then Ginny was like, or anyone, like, we don't know all the Gryffindors, but I think some of them were like, oh, come on, Neville, come on.
Yeah. Yep. So... All right. Well, hey, I mean, so that's all good and well. We're talking about Neville. We're talking about what Ron, Ron's head's swelling up as well.
Telling his story to some second grade ladies, girls.
Yeah, he starts just enjoying that. He's telling to anybody who will listen, right?
Yeah.
And then one day Hagrid, though, invites him down to, his hut. Yep. And that's, he's like, well, he probably wants to hear the story. Hagrid wants to hear from me and what's going on. He almost turns into a little bit of like a Lockhart, like a little delusional.
Yeah, I know. I thought about that too when I read it.
It's like, well, clearly Hagrid wants to hear about what happened to me. However, he is more, he's troubled by Buckbeak's trial.
Yeah.
And they feel bad. They hadn't really remembered it, but that's not the real reason, right? The real reason he wants to calm down here is Hermione.
Yeah.
A reminder about friendship.
And, I mean, props to Hagrid in this moment.
Yeah, he's going through a difficult time himself.
Yes.
And still scolds these guys and says, hey, what are you guys doing?
Yeah, because he was like, look, I mean, again, I understand that you didn't have time, you were busy. That's okay. I really, really think that's fine. But Hermione was lonely and came to see me and help me out. And Hagrid has his heart in the right place. First of all, I don't know. It's like Hermione has no other friends than Harry and Ron, really, right? She's lonely when they don't hang out with her.
Yeah, I mean, so that's something we learned from book one, is that a lot of the other Gryffindors, even though she was earning them points left and right, I bet you some of the upperclassmen were kind of like, all right, well, you go, girl.
Yeah.
But her own classmates are kind of like, she's, one-upping us, and she's... Yeah. Better than us, or she's... I see this actually a lot of times when you have kids who come in and they are just grinding, getting after it. They're doing a good job. And the other kids start to kind of resent them.
Yeah.
That goes back to what I was saying earlier, too. Be careful about the people you hang out with because they'll want to bring you down. They like that's Hermione's just strive. She wants to learn, wants to do her thing. And other people are kind of ticked off by it. Oh, yeah. You just think you're so cool and you can go like study and do, well, whatever. And it's like she didn't do anything to you. She's just passionately into her books and into her studies and she's doing her thing. But yeah, it doesn't feel like she has a lot of friends. And so when Ron and Ron and Harry are not around, it really shows.
Yeah.
My other observation, and I just thought about this, is, you know, going back to book one, Neville's the one that says, "Hey guys, it's dangerous. Don't go do it." And she's like, "Neville, I'm really sorry about this." And then boom, full body bind curse. And he's done. So she's like, "Okay, I'm in with the guys. We're going down. We're doing the thing." And then Chamber of Secrets, she gets petrified. And now in book three, she's way more cautious. She seems a lot more. She's the cautionary. She's the she's back to the cautionary Hermione, who sort of says, "Hey, hold up. There's there's a mass murderer out there. Sirius Black, you guys. We got to check the firebolt. You should not be going into Hogsmeade. You shouldn't be doing these things." And she's doing it out of love and concern, etc. But it is very different. I mean, she starts that way in Sorcerer's Stone and then kind of dips into this rebellious, rule-breaking Hermione, which is awesome, and goes on this adventure at the end with them. And then she's investigating it for sure with them at the beginning of Chamber of Secrets, but then she's petrified. And after that, you come back, and so just an observation, she you come into Prisoner of Azkaban, and she's not as, she's sort of like, let's just, one, she's very busy. She's got tons of schoolwork to do, but it feels like she's more just really cautionary and really getting on them for certain things that would be like, really, Hermione, what's the big deal here? We're, we should be fine over in Hogsmeade. The broom, does it really, I mean, come on, is it that big of a deal?
But she's right. I mean, 2 years at Hogwarts already taught them Hogwarts is not the safest place on earth. And you should be careful.
With,
like, who you talk to and what you investigate, where you go. Yeah, for sure.
So now, essentially, the guys will basically, they're going to make up with Hermione, right? They, they're going to go back, make up. So they feel like they've let Hagrid down a little bit. They forgot about that. They're scolded. Like, Hermione is your friend. Go back and fix things. So then they do. And by the time that they do, they go back and they're talking to her, but she's noticing they're about to sneak out again. So she's again worried and saying, "Hey, I don't think that we should be we should be doing that." She does try to put aside the differences between their pets.
Ron is not though yet. He's not there yet.
No, he's not there yet. but and we'll get there in a second. Once that's going to be kind of transitioning us into next chapter.
Yeah.
Because right now they're still just sort of like, "No, we're going to do what we want."
Yeah.
And it's that's that whole idea of we're going to do what we want. We're going to go to Hogsmeade, do our thing, ignore what Hagrid says. Like, we start to get kind of the rekindling of the friendship again. But then it's quickly squashed because the boys just decide we're going to do our thing. We got the Marauder's Map. We got the Invisibility Cloak. We're untouchable. Okay, so we're going to go do our thing.
I know.
And they do. They go to the One-Eyed Witch. They see that it's unguarded and stuff, right? And this is when they make their break. So on as you said in the summary, on Saturday morning, that's when Harry pretends to go back to the Commons.
Yeah.
"See you, Ron. Have a good time." And I mean,
and it's so interesting. He makes sure that Hermione sees him go back, but then at the same time, Hermione knows about the One-Eyed Witch. So who are you trying to fool? Like,
she knows.
Okay, you can fool the others, but not Hermione.
Right, and she's just sort of giving him. We don't see her in that moment, but I guarantee there's like this side eye, eye rolling, like, "Oh my gosh, they're doing it. This is so dumb." I could actually see her maybe even like shadowing Ron to kind of protect and just
maybe
be there.
Yeah, what should she do on
that day? Oh, bless her. I bet you she was.
Aww.
I bet you she was
she
just...
she probably went on her own.
Yeah, man. Gosh.
Because Neville couldn't go either.
I love Hermione. She's love her so sweet.
Even though she has her moments where she turns very dark.
Yeah, she does. She does.
No, but in general, she's awesome. And yeah, I feel bad for her in this moment.
Yeah. Now, Neville's also, though, not allowed to go to Hogsmeade.
I know, and this is terrible. I feel bad for Neville, but at the same time, if I was in Harry's shoes, and again, if I wanted to do that and I decided to do that, it would be so annoying if you then run into someone who's like, hey, what are you doing? Let's hang out all day long together and do this vampire essay. And I think it's super funny that he says, I don't understand that thing about the garlic at all. Do they have to eat it? Or
yeah,
that's just a funny sign.
That is funny. You know, and I love Neville because from his perspective, he's just like, hey, I'm cooped up here. You're cooped up here. Let's do something, Harry.
Yes.
You know, let's go to the library. Let's walk around. You know, let's just hang out today, man. Let's try to make the best of it. And it's too bad. I almost wonder, what if Harry didn't have this, hadn't already told Ron and set up, and he wasn't going into Hogsmeade and he was going to follow the rules? I guarantee,
maybe
hope.
Maybe he would have, yeah.
Yeah, I would hope that he'd be like, yeah, Neville, let's go. Like, what's up? I mean, yeah. I'm not, you know, I got nothing to do. You know, let's hang out. Read some books, study, chill, and do our thing. Because I really feel like Neville's just a good guy, and he's just trying to make the best of a bad situation.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So, but Harry is annoyed, and he does go back up to the common room and
Snape has to, because and this is, I think, quite interesting. So, what is Snape, like, again, it's very, very, like, Snape shows up in places where Harry is all the time, and he's like, what are you two doing here? He clearly knows something's up, like, why can't they, maybe they just met there. Like they would, because later I think we learned that the One-Eyed Witch would be kind of on the way to Gryffindor Tower.
Mm-hmm.
So why couldn't they just have met there and talk, right? But he knows the way he says, what are you two doing here? An odd place to meet. To Harry's immense disquiet, Snape's black eyes flicked to the doorways on either side of them and then to the One-Eyed Witch. And later when they're saying, okay, we're going to the common room. Harry looks back and Snape was running one of his hands over the One-Eyed Witch's head, examining it closely. So that makes me think 100% that Snape sometimes just goes around the castle and kind of scans with his legilimency skills for Harry's mind.
Absolutely 100%. Does.
Like he knew something is up with the witch, the statue. There's no way he could have just read the, I mean, he might have, I don't know, but
no, that's that. And I love people who come across like, yeah, how did he, once you find out that this is something he's good at and he can practice this really well and he can shield his own mind from Voldemort and stuff, you realize as you look back on a second read, you're like, oh, he actually can, you know, I would love to, I don't know if J.K. Rowling has ever said anything about that specifically, but it feels like he was reading Harry's mind multiple times throughout the series and got just glimpses. Like, you do have to be, I think proximity is important and you have to be near them and stuff. So as you're rushing up to someone, you quickly get a glimpse of what they were thinking and Neville's there kind of distracting him and he just caught One-Eyed Witch something, right? Hogs, you know, whatever he's thinking about is like, boom, I'm going to investigate that. Yeah. What's going on here? Yeah.
That makes me wonder, do you have to know that the person is there to be able to read their mind? Because in book one, when Harry tried the invisibility cloak for the first time, he runs into Quirrell, and then Snape's there too, or Filch. I don't know, Filch and Snape, they're all there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Snape's there, definitely, somehow, close to him, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
And, or is that a movieism? I don't know. But if he was, like, could he feel the presence, the mind? Could he hear the mind? Or does he, I think he has to actively focus on it, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Like, it's not just like he, like, let's say Edward Cullen.
Yeah,
he would just hear
or Queenie.
Thoughts.
Queenie,
yeah. They would just hear thoughts, right? And they could know, even though someone would be invisible, if they don't close their mind, their mind, then they would know.
Right, and she's more of a, Queenie is more of a natural, just without any effort really, a natural gifted.
Right, she just
gifted,
hears it. She has to
kind of. Others, I think, have to kind of, like Snape, have to practice it. They might be more gifted in it, but they have to be more intentional in their targeting. Because Queenie, at one point, was just in the, what would be the American, like, Makuza.
Makuza, I am.
And her sister, also, she's attached to her sister and sort of can feel something wrong.
Oh, yeah. She drops something, right? Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. From a distance, she's just cued into that and like, whoa, what's going on?
Yeah.
Whereas I don't think a Dumbledore or a Snape just walking floors away or even like a city away or across the city would be able to pick up on those feelings.
Yeah.
I feel like they need some proximity and they need some to be intentional and to choose to investigate that mind a little bit. So,
Yeah.
Good question though. Good thought. Mm-hmm. Right. All right. So, eventually Harry does break away and he's able to get back to the One-Eyed Witch and pick up his cloak and get over into Hogsmeade much later than he had anticipated or they had planned, right? And he gets into Honeydukes and him and Ron are just off doing their thing.
Oh, they're having a great time.
Great time.
Even though Ron thinks it's a lot odd that he has to talk to thin air, just, you know, like nothing.
Yeah.
So he can't see him.
But it's fun.
It is. Definitely. They're having fun. They even, like, it's a nice day, so they don't want to stay inside. They go up to the Shrieking Shack, and I think Ron tells him, like, even ghosts don't go there.
Yeah, man.
And Fred and George have even tried to break in, but no way. And that's kind of crazy. Like, Lupin's been gone for over how many years?
Yeah, but the legend and the lore persist.
It's still, no one's ever bought the land or tried to do something. It's just... not even the ghosts go there.
You know, I almost wonder if there wasn't sort of an old charm or something that Dumbledore put on that shack.
Yeah.
That sort of, you know how muggles, when they approach Hogwarts, something eerie sets on them. They get a gut feeling that says, don't go in that direction.
Turn around.
No, I'm not going that way. And you almost wonder if there's not like a charm that's sort of lingering or had faded
maybe
a little bit, some powerful magic. Mm-hmm. You know, because as Dumbledore says, magic leaves traces.
Yeah,
and,
true.
And I would imagine the sounds of a werewolf and all the things that Lupin had going on, as well as wards by Dumbledore back in the day, might still linger. And then again, the lore associated with it as well.
Yeah, if you imagine like Newt, who investigated that place and retraced what happened.
Yeah, yeah.
He could have, maybe someone like him could have done the same thing to the Shrieking Shack and kind of retraced the steps of the werewolves and then maybe even the other animagi.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, possibly. But in this chapter, we get an unexpected visitor, though. So, you know, Ron and Harry are doing the thing, having a good time, marching around. And here comes their favorite three.
Of course. What are they doing there?
Folks. Malfoy, Crabbe, and Goyle show up. They come up over the hill. And as they do, I mean, this is actually crazy timing. Harry was just about to take off the invisibility cloak, right?
Yes.
He was about to just sort of say,
because
okay,
he's got,
cool.
like, you know, you have to go up a hill to get to the shack. So he's, like, getting warmer. And he's like, oh, I want to just... get some fresh air, take it off.
Yeah, I'm out here away from, no one's around.
Yeah.
We should be fine. And then these guys. How long were they tracking them? That's the thing. I guarantee they saw Ron headed in this direction.
Yeah, and what are the chances that they are talking still about Buckbeak while they're walking up the hill?
Right.
And Hagrid and stuff. Like, it feels very much like they did that on purpose to...
oh, yeah.
To get Ron.
To get to Ron.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep, and this is where, they I think in the movie, right? I mean, you've got Hermione there. They don't really do the whole...
Yeah,
that where she doesn't... she's mad at Ron, but she's still there. I like that because I think of a little date between Ron and Hermione.
Oh, I know. They did that in the first time
yeah.
when they went to Hogsmeade.
But still, I think it's, you know, it's just fun to think about them together. Or her
that
shadowing them.
That makes you wonder if Hermione right now on her own is just like retracing... like, or like going to the places where she went with Ron. It's like, oh.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, when I first came here with Ron, that was fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Surprised that she doesn't just stay and not go to Hogsmeade and just sort of says, like, hey, I'm just going to keep studying, because she seems to be so swamped.
True. True. What's she doing then at Hogsmeade? Maybe
Maybe she is studying and she gets a butterbeer and she, or something, and
oh,
she's
yeah.
just kind of like.
Or she's at the Madame Puttyfoot's.
Yeah.
Just getting a coffee.
Coffee and just chilling and doing a little study. That would be fun. Just change the scenery. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, they're made fun of, though. Ron is sort of Malfoy's coming at him with the old classics about his family and you know,
also
poverty.
Also Buckbeak and both. Mm-hmm.
So it just turns into basically, Harry decides to take the opportunity to get after him. Does he start throwing
mud? He throws mud and what else does he do? Like other things at them, and they try to find who did that. This scene is kind of odd to me. Honestly, they're living in a magical world.
Yeah.
And they're like, huh? Who did that? Like, I can't see. Like, as if Ron couldn't have, like, conjured a snowball, like, you know, some mud and used a spell against him. Or someone else who's, like, behind a tree who couldn't have Wingardium Leviosa some mud into their faces. And they're like, huh? How does this work?
Yeah.
There's no one here. I can't see anyone.
Right. They're just caught off guard. Yeah, they're definitely just caught off guard. It's like
kind of strange to me, though, because they're all from old wizarding families, and it's not like they're muggles who still have that mindset of there has to be a source of this physical action that we experience. It's just kind of, I don't know. It just does, for me, it
they're
doesn't
almost, yeah, too scared.
The picture of they should be used to magical things, right?
And, right.
again, they're assuming, I guess, that Ron maybe is doing it, or who they're probably, I don't know, maybe they maybe think they Hermione is behind one of the trees.
Yeah, possibly.
But
I think you can kind of maybe sense that, like, Ron's not doing something, and so that's what makes them kind of go like, oh, it's not him, so what is this?
Yeah.
And
maybe, yeah, you could look at it like that.
And to be honest with you, I think anybody who saw a floating head just floating around the forest would be freaked out a little bit.
True.
Initially, and then just get.
Yes.
And then the running off is just to go tell.
Yeah.
At that point, it's like, oh, this is Potter. Scared me for a second, but I'm going to tell on him. Yes. He's not supposed to be out here.
Yeah.
And it's a race back to Hogwarts. So, which is funny because they're racing in the next chapter.
It's almost like Harry is so, yes, they are. It's Harry is so sure that Malfoy will get to Hogwarts before him.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, like,
he does.
I thought the way the tunnel was probably going to be more straightforward shot to the castle.
But he has to go all the way back
to the village, to Honeydukes, into the cellar, make sure no one sees him or moving doors. And true. He has to be more careful. And then he just takes off the cloak and runs through the tunnel.
Yep.
Because before that, he has to make sure the cloak covers every part of him while he's running through. That's kind of
the
hard part about it. And then I mean, props to him. He does think about, okay, we have to leave the cloak here because if somebody catches me, they know about the cloak. And then they know what happened.
Right. Unfortunately, he was just thinking, you know, the cloak's most important. Yeah. Keep this here. But
he kept everything there.
Yeah, he
cleaned his hands a little bit. But then at the same time, if he had hesitated one more moment, Snape would have seen him come out of the witch, the statue of the witch.
He didn't have a moment to spare. Yep. And actually then Ron, so you know, I bet you Ron sort of starts back after Harry towards Hogsmeade and is like, oh, I need to go after Malfoy. Which way do I go?
Yeah,
I
got to
get back quick, because he gets back, you know, shortly after and says, oh, it's me. Yeah. All that stuff is mine. And that leads us to the point where, you know, Snape confronts him and he asks Harry to turn out his pockets, and we get into the Marauder's map and like, what is this thing?
Yeah.
And Snape is sort of, you know, he's waving his wand over it. He's trying to use different magic.
Yeah.
The Zonko candy is easily explained, right? It's just like, this is from Ron. Like,
yeah.
I'm just enjoying it. It's nothing. I wasn't there. And he's trying to look really like solid, like I'm good. I also imagine, too, since he knows he's been caught, like he doesn't even realize that he's closing his mind. But I bet you he is closing his mind a little bit, because we just talked about legitimacy. And I think just a natural, when you're in
true, he has a talent, like, yeah, all witches have a little talent for it.
Well, I think
he struggles later, but
yeah, I just think the point is that, like, when you're in a fight or flight kind of you know, response situation, I feel like witches and wizards are very much sort of like, he's lying, so he's actively trying to cover up where he's been.
Right.
So he's doing that with his words, his posture, his body language.
Right.
So therefore you feel
probably his mind too.
It would trickle into his mind, and that's why Snape can't really
read
his mind. So he turns out his pockets, and then we've got
because Snape doesn't know that the map is a map. So he can't read it in Harry's thoughts.
And I love that he goes and tries to throw it in the fire. And he basically is sort of like, I'm gonna toss this in the fire.
Such a classic move. Yeah.
So it is something important. And so what does that mean? It tells him it's something.
Yeah.
And it's good on when Lupin shows up later, it's good that he's able to kind of say, yeah, it seems like it's just a joke. It matches the Zonko's, you know, I forget what he had exactly, if it was something from the Zonko's.
Dung bombs.
Something like, it was a bag of something. And so this parchment is played up to kind of match that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's just something that a kid wouldn't want to lose. They think it's funny and sort of a prank. But Snape still does, he knows. He knows something's up. And you brought up an interesting point. You thought, you wondered, I think when we were reading the chapter, you'd ask a couple times, like, how does he know?
This is the most, this is the most confusing part to me about how Snape acts in this moment. So he tries to do magic to make the map or the piece of parchment reveal what the secrets are. And then finally something happens and it's just writing down, or letters appear, words appear with insults.
Mm-hmm.
Insults towards Snape himself. And they're these four individuals that are called Mr. Prongs, Mr. Mooney, and Wormtail and where is it?
Patfoot.
Patfoot, Mr. Patfoot. Yeah, they call him Mr. Patfoot. And Mr. Wormtail, sorry. So they all insult Snape. And something, so this is, I don't understand really. Either in this moment, it's the first time he made the connection between like the name Moony, maybe that's the, you know, moon and werewolf. And that's why he summons Lupin. But if he does know who these people are, why would he summon Lupin? Because it, clearly Lupin is one of them. Mm. And wouldn't he know that Lupin would try and cover this up with Harry and Harry would get away? Like, I don't understand his action. If you know, like, he clearly confronts Lupin. Maybe he got them the map directly or the parchment directly from the manufacturers looking at Lupin. So he must have made the connection somehow. But then why do you get Lupin in this moment?
Well, I think he doesn't know it's a map. He thinks it's something. And so what's interesting is Lupin knows it's a map.
Yeah.
I think maybe he does recognize their code names, I think. Mm. And so therefore, okay, this has something to do with his father. This has something to do with his old friends. Somehow he's gotten this and it relates to them. He doesn't know its significance or anything. So it's just like, I'm going to call Lupin down here and see if he's going to tell the truth. Yeah. See what's up. See what this thing actually is. And then to see him kind of dismiss it like it's nothing. You know, this is nothing. This is an old, you know, whatever. And then he doesn't give Snape time to respond.
Yeah.
He instantly just sort of says, tucks it away. Thank you, Severus. And then Harry,
Ron comes in. Yeah, Ron came in.
Right.
Yep.
And he basically says, I need to talk to you about your essay. Come with me. Let's go. Like, he covers.
Yeah.
And he gives him the look like, I'm going to smooth this over. And I really think it's just Snape knows. I do think maybe he recognizes their names. Maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong. But
I think he must have. I mean, yeah, there's like no other way. Why would he call him? Like, he says
dark arts.
Right. It's a foil of dark arts, right? And Lupin's like, nah, I don't think so.
Right.
But then the comment about the manufacturers is like, gives it away that he suspects that it's Lupin and his friends. And
yeah,
I mean, how awful. They just, that's kind of, what do you call it? Like, evidence, again, that this map writes insults about Snape and his nose or his greasy hair. How mean is that? And then one of these guys is your colleagues now.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I feel like, I hope that Snape knows that Lupin, I mean, they're grown-ups now, and Lupin, he has lost all three of his best friends, really, but
yeah. Would this map have insulted Professor McGonagall if she tried to get into it?
Great question.
I think it would have. I think it's a defense.
I don't think it would have insulted her, but it would have said like some sarcastic, clever comments.
Yeah, I think it's just somehow it's been enchanted to whoever is trying to get into it. It's a defense mechanism.
Yeah.
It could be Dumbledore. It could be anybody who's trying to get into it. If they don't know it's secret and they don't know how to open it, then it's meant to be dismissive and coy. And
yes.
So I don't think they made it like, oh, let's make this also have an element or a layer
that is just to insult
Snape. But it is. No. It sucks that it does. And it's sort of this. It's sort of cutting into his history with the Marauders.
Right. And it flares up old wounds. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really help his,
Right. So to finish all this off, I mean, essentially, and this is, I think, true in for a lot of youngsters and for a lot of people, the angry, visceral kind of aggressive Snape and his sort of questioning of Harry doesn't really affect, or him scolding him severely about Black and sneaking off and all that kind of stuff doesn't get to Harry. But what does is Lupin being disappointed. And that's because he has more respect for Lupin. He's learned more from him, and he feels a connection, and he feels a caring. There's a rapport. Yeah. There's a relationship. And so when Lupin's disappointed, Harry really feels it. Both boys kind of understand. Both. Okay, like, oh boy,
we really messed up. Yeah.
Yep. Not good. So.
And while they're realizing that they really messed up, Hermione shows up, and then she drops the news on them that Buckbeak and Hagrid, they have lost their case. On top of all that, so.
Yep, and now it's kind of come full circle. Like, okay, we've been out running wild, doing our thing, being carefree, dismissing this whole Sirius Black thing. It's just they downplay the heck out of it, and it's almost a Yeah, it comes full circle. Mm-hmm. They've lost a friend a little bit. Now they're in trouble. They got really close. And it causes you those moments where you get really close to something like that, like you get in trouble, you reflect back and you're like, oh, I need to back up a second and start like taking more responsibility for my actions and like and apologize and say I was wrong and just walk a straighter line because I've been walking kind of carefree. And that's what I think they realize here. So and then we'll get into the next chapter where we'll break down all of that in chapter 15, the Quidditch finale. So,
yeah.
But wow, what a chapter. I mean,
it's one of the like really cool that we get this Snape James connection, a little more of it, and Lupin is there, and then Harry and Ron learn the hard way. I'm glad they do. So, like, they don't get away with everything, so that's a good thing.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
All right, then with that, I think, guys, this is our last episode really before Christmas, even though we have a little bit of a Christmas theme next time too, because we're going to go ahead and record right away, so we have everything ready for you to go before you go to Germany. Before we turn off the mics here in a second, I just wanted to give you one last recommendation of the week, of the year, really, from Irma Pintz. So a book I have been reading the last couple of weeks is called Think Like a Monk by Jay Shetty. Think Like a Monk is a personal development book that draws on the author's experiences living as a monk in India and the subsequent return to the Western world. The book aims to provide readers with insights and practical advice on how to incorporate the calm, purposeful, and centered mindset of a monk into everyday life. So I thought it was cool that they covered topics like mindfulness, meditation, overcoming negative emotion, or just in general, working with your emotions, and like personal growth and self-discovery, all that kind of stuff. And yesterday in the gym, I also listened to Laura Seiler. If you're from Germany or any German-speaking country, you probably know Laura Seiler. She's a huge podcaster in the personal development world. And she was interviewing a Shaolin monk who's been training Kung Fu since he was 4 years old. It was just so impressive. And the mindset, I think we're more and more interested in how we really can shape the world around us, how much power our mind, our thoughts have. So if you're into that or interested in that kind of stuff, it was an interesting read. Again, not all of it is like, not everything is super applicable to, you know, a Western world life sometimes, but he really tries to show you how can you make small little changes, small little mindset changes that the monks taught him. So that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love it. You know, I've noticed more and more how the books we read, the podcast, all the things that we encounter, they trickle into our Harry Potter discussion.
They do a little bit. Yeah, it's just fun.
I love it.
To share, because they are good books, and we just want to share whatever we encounter that made our life a little bit, or even like our day a little bit better. Yeah. So maybe that you were interested in it.
Yeah, for sure. And I just think it's like as you grow as a reader, like if I would have done this podcast right after just reading them, it wouldn't have been any of this. It wouldn't have been all that deep analysis or commentary. Right. It's really just what happened and what are some of the theories and, you know, more sticking right to the text. But it's fun. Yeah. I'm enjoying this. So thanks for the recommendation. That's all, friends, for this week. We'll be back, like we said, next week. We're going to be, as Lottie said, we're batching these bad boys out and trying to get them ready to go. Diving into the new year, we hope some friends. Well, I mean, actually, all the time we have, when the new year starts, people go to find a podcast. So True. If you're one of those new folks who popped in and found the podcast, welcome. Leave us a review. We just it's just our cozy cottage where we talk we talk Potter and we just love it. So it's sort of we our do. Love language.
And if you're one of our air quote old listeners, then maybe you have a friend you want to recommend our podcast to and they might like it. So
yeah,
that'd be
sure.
awesome.
Yeah. All right, friends. Well, hey, again, that's all for this week. Thank you for tuning in to Shell Cottage Radio 94.7 COZY. We hope you'll join us in the future. We thoroughly enjoy meeting new positive Potter people that don't behave like babbling, bumbling bands of baboons.
Baboons.
If you don't want to miss out on the next episode, then be sure to subscribe to the podcast and leave us a review and follow on social media at Fleur and Bill.
If you truly enjoy our content, consider supporting our growing wizarding family on Patreon or Apple Premium. You'll find all the links down below. Thank you so much to all our current patrons. We appreciate you to Luna and back. On our next reread episode, we will continue our journey through Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban with Chapter 15, the Quidditch Final. So make sure you tune back in next time. And until then, have a great rest of your week and Merry Christmas. Thanks for joining us in our Shell Cottage today. We know it's not much, but it's home.
On our next reread, we'll continue our journey through Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, Chapter 15, the Quidditch Final. Final? So make sure to tune back in next week, and until then, have a great rest of your week. Merry Christmas, happy holidays. Thanks for joining us in Shell Cottage today. We know it's not much, but it's home. Knox. Yeah. Just want to throw the happy holidays in there in case that was like, you know, I don't know. You do what you want with it. Don't matter. Bye. Love you. Okay.
Knox.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.